Pull up in the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation for Thursday, March 12th. We're going to go a little out of order today, and then we will extract proper payment for that later in the session. And we'll open up House Bill 2562 for a public hearing. And Mr. Stembridge.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 2562 increases the maximum length of school buses from 40 feet to 45 feet. It also declares an emergency. It takes effect upon passage. No amendment.
Okay, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Dave Barrow, representing the Bluebird Bus Company. With me is Ms. Molly Blagg, who is the president of Western Bus Sales Company, is the company that sells Bluebird buses in Oregon. And she will explain why we need to, why we've asked the legislature to move this bill forward, and we'll be very brief. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bluebird, the company that we represent in the state of Oregon, did redesign their Type D 84-passenger bus model to be 40 foot 7 inches and in another configuration 40 foot 9 inches, just barely over the 40 foot length. The reason that they redesigned this was to focus specifically on safety and driver ergonomics. The focus on safety included better visibility out the windshield for the driver, upwards towards the traffic lights and downwards towards the critical safety area of loading and unloading of school children onto the bus. They also revamped the steering geometry, allowing for the bus to turn better in areas like cul-de-sacs, school loading zones, that kind of thing. Specifically, they also spent time working on the driver ergonomics of the vehicle. Driver's seat is a driver's office, and it's very important for good ergonomics. They moved the dash area forward, moved the seat forward, and really thought smartly about the location of where those switches should be to provide the best ergonomics for the driver in the driver's seat. This all makes sense for Oregon because it also encourages school districts to use their resources most efficiently by allowing the maximum capacity of children on the school buses, and then especially at a time where there are fiscal constraints based on the economy. This is extra important this year. Out of the 50 states, Oregon's only one of 11 that does not allow a school bus to be over 40 feet in length, and of those 11, at least three are currently changing their law. There's no cost to the state of Oregon. There's no cost to school districts. It allows for continued healthy competition between school bus dealers in the state and for safe transportation of school kids every day in the state of Oregon. I strongly support passage of this bill. Thank you.
Any questions for either of these two guests?
Chair.
Senator Schrader.
So even the length, when you increase it, it doesn't impact maneuverability of the bus?
No, with the overall redesign of the vehicle, they actually allow it to turn even better than it does currently.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, thank you. We've got the trio. Bennett, Smith, Williams, and then on deck, Stephen Hewlett from Department of Ed.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, and we support the bill. We believe it is good for school districts to have competition in the marketplace when they go out looking for school buses. So, and certainly don't see any problem with the change in length, and agree with the manufacturer that it will add to driver ergonomic comfort and the rest that was testified to. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, David Williams with the Oregon School Boards Association, just here to lend our support for a great little technical amendment to statutes to allow us to purchase buses longer than 40 feet. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association. We are also here in support of House Bill 2562, allowing school buses to be longer than 40 feet so that we can add this new improved version to the fleet. I don't know, I wasn't able to hear all the testimony, so I wanted to make sure you understood that the most important reason for this addition is that these new school buses are have a dramatic improvement in their in allowing the driver to see children who are in front of the bus. That's one of the blind spots with school buses, or can be, and this new bus design allows much more visibility for the driver to be able to see children if they are standing in front of the bus. And hopefully not run over them. Also, the ergonomics of the driver area is very important to us. School bus drivers have a number of health complaints that are related directly to driving a school bus, and this will help them minimize those health complications. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Any questions? Okay, thank you. Our last sign-up is Mr. Hewlett, Department of Transport, of Education.
Good afternoon, Chair Metzger and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stephen Hewlett, and I am the Director of the Pupil Transportation Section for the Department of Education. We have looked at this bill, and we would support it. It just takes a very minor change in our OAR to allow for this to be in. And any time that a school bus is being built to improve safety, especially for the students in the area that we call the danger zone, we are always in support of making sure that we support, you know, protect our kids in that danger zone. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hewlett. Any questions? Okay. May not be able to add 9 days of school year, but we could add 9 inches to the school bus. We'll do up. We'll do the best we can. Close the public hearing. Open a work session. Senator Verger, would you like to make a motion?
I move that House Bill 2562 move to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Verger has moved House Bill 2562 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Who would like to carry the school bus bill? Pro-school, pro-kids. Okay. Senator Verger will be our carrier.
And might I ask a question? How many S's are there in the plural of bus?
Six.
How many what?
How many S's are there in the...
Three.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, B-U-S-S-E-S.
That's what I'll do.
Now we're going to hold two over here.
Thank you.
It's
two.
Controversial.
Two.
That's probably...
All. All. Two. Buses versus buses. Bus boys and bus...
Right.
Buses. Okay. Thank you. You can leave now if you'd like. We're going to open a public hearing now on...
I don't think that settled anything.
Senate Bill 578.
Okay.
And actually, what I want to do is open a public hearing on... Let's open it. 578, 579, and 583. And Mr. Stenbridge, why don't you start us off, and then I'm going to have Jen from my staff take us off on this.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, to start with, Senate Bill 578 creates a 12-member task force to study the safety of all-terrain vehicles, report findings to the Legislative Assembly. It currently has the Oregon Department of Transportation staffing the task force. You have a -1 amendment that changes the staffing to the State Parks and Recreation Department. Senate Bill 579 extends highway motor vehicle operation safety requirements, including the use of seat belts and child safety systems, to premises open to the public. You have the -1 amendment that would limit that extension of safety requirements to children younger than age 16, and it penalizing parents and guardians for violations involving children younger than age 12. Senate Bill 583 requires the wearing of motorcycle helmets by drivers and passengers of Class 2 all-terrain vehicles who are younger than 18 years of age.
Okay. Thank you. Jen, why don't we start with you?
Okay. Thank you, Chair Metzger, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jennifer Lewis. I'm Senator Metzger's legislative assistant. And I have experts with me to answer your tough questions. I'm just going to go through what the bills do for each one. Do you want me to do all three or just start one by one?
Why don't you go ahead and give us a summary of all, and then we'll go to Lindy. And
okay. So Senate Bill 578 is the task force bill. Current ATV vehicle classifications have not adequately kept up with changes in technology. Vehicles are currently divided into classifications by weight and width, regardless of vehicle design. Certain safety regulations do not seem to match with the corresponding vehicles in their classifications. Lindy will give more examples of specific problems. But given that this is a complex issue that needs to involve an open process with many people, the goal of this legislation is to establish a work group that is tasked with making specific policy recommendations to the legislature. Having a formal work group will help engage participation and buy-in from all of the OHV community, which have in the past resisted some changes. The 12-member task force will have representation from ODOT, Parks, the OHV community, law enforcement, and the medical field. The task force will present the recommendations to the legislature in November, no later than October 1st, 2010. The task force is directed to specifically study weight and size classifications, and to study safety features for both adults and children. As written, ODOT has the responsibility of staffing the task force, but we believe that it is more appropriate to give the tasking responsibility to parks. The Dash 1 amendment that you have accomplishes this, and it is my understanding that both ODOT and parks are supportive of this change. This is an important bill to ensure that our laws are keeping up with technology and that the laws are truly protecting the public. Senate Bill 579 is about restraints. As written, Senate Bill 579 extends the current seatbelt law to be applicable on all premises open to the public. Currently, statute only requires seatbelts to be utilized on highways of the state. This extension ensures that when individuals are driving off-road, the same safety standards are in place, requiring drivers and passengers to use safety seatbelts or harnesses. Current OARs do provide that most vehicles must be equipped with securely mounted seatbelts that are readily available for use of the driver and passenger. This bill would require that they use those restraints. There are some important exclusions in seatbelt law that are still going to remain applicable. If a vehicle is not required to be equipped with safety belts or safety harnesses at the time it was manufactured, it still will not be required to use them. If the safety belts have been added after market, they would be required to use those. This exemption is important. We are not requiring that vehicles that are not originally designed to have seat belts will not have to use them. It's also not noteworthy to talk about the phrase open to the public. This bill will not affect individuals on their private property. There is a Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 579, which restricts the changes to the seatbelt law to only apply to children under 16 years of age. Senate Bill 583 is about helmets. It's a simple and very short bill. The bill includes Class 2 vehicles in the current helmet law already existing for Class 1 and Class 3 ATV users. The bill simply states that if you are under 18 years of age and you are riding in or operating a Class 1, 2, or 3 vehicle, you must be wearing a helmet. There are two important qualifying exemptions. If the Class 2 vehicle is registered under ORS 803.420 and has a roof or roll bar, helmets are not required. So this is vehicles that are street legal and have a roof or a roll bar. So you think about a Jeep or a Hummer that's off-road. They would not be required to use a helmet. And there's also an exclusion for family, agriculture, and forestry operations in addition to private property.
Thank you, Jen. And Lindy, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you very much.
I enjoyed all working with you, our committee last year, and your advocacy for outdoor recreation, and Lindy's the one that brought these to us this year as a follow-up for work that she did last year. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Linda Minton, and I wanted to first thank you and take this opportunity to thank you for the work on Senate Bill 101. To follow up on the progress, we have a phenomenal... Well, Parks has done a great job. We have a phenomenal online program. They've currently trained over 20,000 people as a result of the passage of Senate Bill 101. We have rider fit components that are working very well in the community, and it's a bill that's been supported and embraced by the OHV community. So thank you very much for that passage. I feel that it will be very helpful for keeping our kids safe in the future and keeping our sport active and viable. When I was working with Senate Bill 101 and going through all the legislation and the languages, I found that it was completely legal to have an infant or a child of any age literally placed in the front seat of a dune buggy with no restraint and no helmet requirement and then tear off across the dunes. It just didn't seem right. It seemed like we needed to really address those concerns. The OHV community is very supportive of that. I expected some opposition. We haven't really found it. I expected that I would be hung up by a noose somewhere. And we have to take responsibility for the safety of our children. You know, it's a sport we love. It's a sport that we enjoy with our family. And there isn't anyone better to say, okay, most people are doing it right, but there's a 5% that aren't. You know, there's always that group that aren't taking good care of their children, and they need to be held accountable for that rather than the sport as a whole. So these bills, I'm not sure which one I should start on.
Well, I think I understand the task force. I just think why don't we start with And we'll talk more about that one later, but why don't we talk about the seat belts, which is 579, and then the helmet, because they're kind of related.
Okay, that sounds great. I have flyers that I have for you up there, and basically, to make a long story short, this is a great bill. It's written very well. The only change that we could really ask, they're pretty simple. One is that it only applies to children and not adults. We aren't quite prepared to go the distance to require helmets for adults and potentially lose the viability of this bill to protect children. Children are our most important goal, protecting our children. So another thing that's very confusing is we need a clear exclusion for saddle seats. I'm Joe Public, and it is exhausting to try to thumb through this rule, this administrative piece, this ORF, and put them all together. And there is already an exclusion for multi-wheeled vehicles, but Joe Public would see multi-wheeled vehicles as being anything that has more than one wheel, which is pretty much everything that's out there. The definition is very specific, though. It says it's Class 1, but you have to go to another location and do another search, and it needs to be, I believe, clear in the bill so that it flows with the language. It's already excluded. It just isn't accessible easily to the public, and I would like to see it more accessible. The reason why is you can't have restraints for a saddle seat vehicle. You'd be strapping somebody onto a motorcycle or an ATV where you would hope that if it rolls over, they can get off of it, not get squashed under it. There's no roll bar protection on a motorcycle or an ATV, and there should not be a restraint. So we just need to make sure that there's a clear exclusion for saddle seat vehicles. And then the other thing is very simple. It is just changing Section 1.3 to include or harness rather than just let it be a seat belt. That language is pretty much through the bill. It's existing language from ODOT, I believe, and it would just be a little bit of cleanup on the language to include or harness. Other than that, there shouldn't be any physical impact to this. People already have car seats. If it's required on road, they're going to have a car seat for their child that they can utilize off road. Some of the concerns were, can you modify a harness to hang on to or hold secure a car seat? And yes, they do break down to just a lap belt. It's a very good bill, and it has a lot of our community, OHV community support in this.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. The helmet bill.
Helmet bill.
583.
Basically the same thing. It's a good bill. It applies only to children. The only concern that I have is that when looking, we do not want to exclude anyone from being able to recreate as a family. Open to the public is pretty broad, so it could be grandpa taking the baby down in his little side-by-side UTV down to the beach while everybody else goes, and we don't want to prevent grandpa from being able to do that. I cannot find a helmet on the market for children that have a head circumference less than 17 and 5/8 inches. And I went online and did some research, and we're talking about children that are under 12 months of age. And so, you know, again, with not wanting to exclude people from recreating as a family, possibly there could be an exclusion that allowed it as long as a child was in an infant seat. But what we don't want is for there to be a requirement and have parents forced to use helmets that are too big for their child, which isn't good for these. I mean, if we're talking an infant, you know, someone under 12, you don't want to stick a big full-face helmet on to comply with the law. You'll cause far more neck damage, and, you know, that's not a good direction to go. But we can't ask somebody to buy a helmet that they can't find on the market. So helmets cost about $50, and they're DOT-approved motorcycle helmets that we're requesting in this bill. And again, 99% of the people that are out there are already doing this. It's the small percentage that aren't that typically tend to put their children at more risk, and they need helmets more than the other children probably do. So.
Okay. Lindy, thank you.
You're welcome.
Questions for either Jen or Lindy? Yes, Senator Berger.
Yes. I'm not sure, but I don't believe you can take an infant on the dunes.
Actually, you can. There is no law that prohibits you. There's no minimum age requirement. And Class 2 vehicles, we're only addressing Class 2 vehicles, which can be cars and trucks. And we're not just talking about the dunes. We're talking about Forest Service roads, Sunday drives, premises open to the public with off-road Class 2 vehicles, which can be the side-by-sides, which are... They have a roll bar and a cage, and they're driven rather than ridden. But those are Class 2, and a lot of people are tooling around in trails up in the woods and in the forest or driving around camp if they're hunting. And so it applies to all public lands that are open.
No, I really follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
I know, I understand that about the bill. What I'm saying is that I don't believe the people that operate the vehicles that are rented that go on the dunes will allow you to take an infant. And I'm not positive about that, but I believe that that's right. I think that you have to have, the child has to be 2 years of age.
But and I would agree with you. I'm sure that that's the case. But we're not talking about rental vehicles. We're talking about if I own a dune buggy or a side-by-side, there is no law that I know of that prohibits me from taking any age child as an occupant in that vehicle. They can't drive it. There is a requirement with Class 2 that you have to be 16 years of age and older and have a driver's license. But as far as the occupants, the only requirement that addresses seatbelt or safety basically says it has to be available. It says nothing about it having to be in use. And there is no helmet requirement either. So.
One more follow-up.
Yeah, okay.
But the bill would affect rentals as well, right?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. Let's set aside for a moment. We'll see if we have any before we're finished here. Kylene Stone, Randy Nicolai, and Gary Sargent. You want to all come up? Well, I guess we'll start with you, Kylene.
Thank you. Chairman Metzger, members of the committee, I'm Kylene Stone. I'm Assistant Director for Recreation Programs and Planning at the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. I'm really here just to offer OPRD's support for this task force in particular and for the intent of the other bills related to ATV safety. Most of my written testimony has already been spoken by Jen and Lindy, so I'm not going to repeat a lot on that other than to say that OPRD actually does have responsibility for administering the ATV program in the state, so in particular we would support the amendment to allow us to staff the committee. All of the financial, all of the money that comes in both for ATV, the tags for permits for people to ride ATVs on public lands, as well as ATV-related gas tax, comes through our ATV program. So we would have administrative dollars to be able to support this. Also, just as was reported, we were responsible for implementing Senate Bill 101 this biennium, and I think it was kind of a Herculean effort on our part, and I'm proud to say that online ATV safety training is available to people in the state now. And since January 1st, we've had approximately 22,000 people who've passed the coursework and another probably 20,000 people who are in the middle of it right now. So we think that that's a good start.
Wow.
We do have in our budget this coming biennium, we do have plans to continue that program, and we do have resources, ATV funds, again, set aside to help us take that program to the next level, which will include some hands-on training as well. All right, for Senate Bill 578, again, we support the task force. For us, one of the areas of particular concern, and for other land managers that we work with, like the Forest Service and BLM, an area of particular concern is the side-by-side vehicles. They really don't fit into the Class 1, Class 2, Class 3 categories that are currently in statute, and so we do feel like, that in particular, that's an issue that needs some attention. So we're happy to help work that out. And then finally, Senate Bill 579, again, we support the intent, which is to ensure that people who operate and ride the vehicles are wearing safety belts. OPRD, as you may or may not know, also is responsible for running the Oregon State Fair, and through our connections with the fair, we did hear from some folks in the fair community some concern that the requirement for seat belts could potentially affect use of people movers at fairs, and I think the explanation that Jen gave is probably sufficient, but that's something that we would want to take a quick look at just to make sure. And then Senate Bill 583, again, we would support the safety intents of that bill as well.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Katie. Before we go on to the next testimony, I'm just curious, Kylie, with the that's pretty large number large. I didn't know what kind of universe was. That's pretty impressive. Have you received any feedback from the users of the online system in terms of we like it, we don't like it, or, I mean, what kind of feedback have you received from the folks that are doing it?
Yeah, Chair Metzger, thanks. We have received quite a bit. We actually have set it up so that we will get feedback, and, of course, there's the general group of folks who especially don't like to have government intervening in their lives, and we've heard from some of them. But for the most part, I think to our surprise, it's been very positive. People have been actually happy that there's a resource out there. A lot of parents, you know, go out and buy an ATV and don't really know what they're getting into, and this has given them a chance to sit down with their kids and go through the training. It's not onerous. It's not difficult, but it allows the family to sort of work it out together, and it's free. So for the most part, we've gotten quite a bit of feedback, and most of it's been pretty positive.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Metzger, committee. My name is Gary Sargent, and I am a power sports dealer, third generation of a four-generation business located in Portland, Oregon. I also am first vice president of the Oregon Independent Automobile Dealers Association that has offices here in Salem and has been around since 1948. Our association encompasses all dealers, whether they're automobile, power sport, boat, and or RV dealers. I'm going to speak to Senate Bill 578. In front of you was handed out pictures of different vehicles that in aesthetic or in the looks, they look similar to each other, yet they would fit into different classifications. I think we'll all agree that life at one time used to be very simple. I started riding when I was in high school and got my first off-road vehicle in 1970, a little Honda three-wheeler. Life was simple then. You could define a Class 1 vehicle, whether it had three or four wheels, and was for off-road use. Class 3 was for a motorcycle, a two-wheel vehicle, and then vehicles that were allowed on road, on the highways, etc., that were now being used off-road would fall under the Class 2. As a dealer, I've seen our industry, much like a cell phone industry, technology has moved forward. If I took out my cell phone, would you know if it was a camera, a personal handheld computer, or just a flat cell phone, you know, in use? Power sports have evolved that way, very similar with technology advancements, and using the measurement for wheelbase, weight is no longer applicable. Therefore, we, as a dealer body, strongly support the creation of a task force to explore correct classifications for all the vehicles that are coming onto the market, and so that it leaves, I guess if I was in law enforcement, I would find it very difficult to enforce the laws and see which describes what. So really, by forming the task force would help create absolute clarity for there is, so there would not be any allowance for interpretation as to one vehicle falls into one category or another. I would add that in the 12-member task force that is proposed, that included in the definition of the OHV community, that it include dealer representation.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the only thing, and I'm not sure if that is encompassed in the OHV community. Thank you for allowing to speak to you, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Sergeant. By the way, how did you survive the flood there on Foster? I saw pictures that showed your place.
Yes. We actually survived very well because of modern technology. We were alerted a day in advance of the potential flooding, and we were able to essentially borrow semi-trucks from my brother-in-law who owns Interstate Meat, load all our vehicles into the semis and take them to high ground, and we were 3 feet underwater, as was predicted. And the city of Portland has ensured us that we were going to well, a commitment was made that they would relocate our business because there's a direct correlation with with actions that have been permitted by the city of Portland that resulted in our business being put underwater.
Sounds like we have a whole other story for another day, don't we?
Another story.
I saw that picture. I said, oh, Mr. Sergeant's in trouble there. That's good. I'm glad you're able to do that. Mm-hmm. Let's complete our panel here first.
Thank you, Chairman Metzger, Senators. My name is Randy Nicolay. I'm here representing the Oregon Recreation Coalition, which I chair. It's approximately three dozen motor vehicle clubs, ranging from everything from Class 1 to snowmobiles. And we're here in support of all three of these measures. Primarily, I was asked to just quickly touch on just when we're looking about the differences and the confusion over types of vehicles, a large contingency is starting to invest in tracks for these vehicles now. You'll see motorcycles. As a matter of fact, just 2 weekends ago, there was a demo ride up on Mount Hood that we took a street legal 450 Honda, put tracks on the back, and went out the snowmobile trails, basically. You have a tag on it, and some don't. So there's all this definition on how to basically govern these vehicles. Similarly, on our presentation here for Senate Bill 578, I draw your attention to the picture of the Class 2 vehicle weighing 860 pounds there, showing two riders on it. Basically, that vehicle, now that it's gone up to a Class 2, those individuals could take their helmets off. And as an ATV safety instructor, that scares me. And here's a bigger vehicle that could actually do more damage to you, but yet, under our current guidelines, no, you would not have to have that helmet on. Touching on a point on our new safety, again, I was thankful for Senate Bill 101 passing, and I'm currently dealing with the hands-on aspect. This last year, I trained 239 riders. I'll have another three dozen going through this weekend. So it's the word is getting out on the online that our 16 and younger are going to need to have that hands-on component being trained, and they're all coming out. So I've been doing really good with that.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Thank you, Mr. Nicolay. Questions for any of our three panels? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, Wendy, it looks like you have kind of been your own critique, you know, rather than the committee, on some of the changes you might like to make. So I think you've done a very good job of bringing up some of the issues we need to still work with. So we'll have you continue work with Jen and the other folks to kind of make these little tweaks. And committee, if you have any feedback on some of the things we heard today, you know, please let Jen know or Ms. Mitten, and we'll kind of make some modifications to these bills to address some of the issues that Wendy herself brought up. And you know, and I'm not generally a big fan of task force, but this is such a, like you folks have pointed out, it's become such an amalgamation of things. No one knows what is anything anymore in terms of Class 1, Class 2, Class 3. It probably is an appropriate time, and we're not going to be able to do it in this committee, is to get the experts together to take a whole brand new look, as Mr. Sargent said, from the ground up as to what fits different categories, because I can see how it's starting to get very confusing. So thank you. We will continue to work on these and bring them back, okay? We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 578, 579, and Senate Bill 583, and we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 127. Mr. Stembridge.
Members of the committee, Chair Metzger, this is Senate Bill 127A. You saw this before, went to the floor as the A engrossed version and was re-referred to the committee. You have the dash, well, it clarifies the responsibility for individuals to show proof of compliance with financial responsibility requirements. You have the dash A2 amendment, which restores the mandatory one-year suspension of driver's license to individuals involved in uninsured motor vehicle collision.
Okay, so colleagues, just a reminder, this was a bill that had a number of elements to it, but the one element created some issues with it, and so what the dash 2 amendment does is basically just says we're going to look at that issue another day, restores the existing language. Let's see. Does anybody from ODOT want to come up on this bill? I think it would just be helpful to, because there was a lot of elements in this, we only had the one controversial one, but so it just might be good to remind the committee again, and then of what we have, and see if we get it right this time. Welcome.
Thanks. Chair Metzger, members of the committee. My name is Lana Cully. I'm the Program Services Manager at DMV. There are several sections that are really kind of cleanup for us that are, we would really still like to have, having to do with some old language that was repealed, having to do with bond and insurance, but they left some of those statutes in there, so that's to clean that up. Section 1 has a statute that allows somebody to send in a statement to us that their vehicle is not being driven on the highways to exempt them from insurance, but they're already exempted if it's not being driven on the highways. And it's caused some confusion for people thinking they can send us something and it alleviates insurance requirements when it really doesn't. And there's Section 2 requires us to notify the county DA when we have belief that a person residing in our county is driving uninsured and not anything we've ever done, not something the county DAs want us to do. And then we put some time frames in there for the insurance companies to notify us because we found that we weren't getting that notification until, you know, months down the road, sometimes years, causing problems for the customer then. And then Section 5 is to fix a conflict having to do with accident reporting requirements. When those changed, this part of it did not get changed to match that. So it's still requiring somebody to notify us or provide us proof when they really can't, and we have no way of knowing that they were in an accident because it's not a reportable accident. So there's no way for us to get that information. Section 6 was just to make clear what requirement is for filing an SR-22, just so it's very clear to somebody to do that. Section 7 is to clarify when the SR-22 filing is required in order for them to receive a hardship permit, and then once that hardship permit expires, the requirement for the SR-22 ends as well. Now, they still may have a requirement for an SR-22 for other things, but related to that hardship permit, it ends at the time the hardship permit expires. Section 8 was just to align Oregon law with the proposed national standard for the date on the SR-22 certificate. So if they're changing the date nationally, then we want to make sure that we have that in our statutes. And then Section 9 was to clarify the insurers that we will accept a SR-22 filing from, and then we also amended that to include surplus or risk retention groups at the request of DCBS. And then Section 11 was the reference to the bond deposit options, which was repealed in 2003. So we're just taking out those references. And Section 14 is the same thing, statutes that are related to the bond and deposits that we no longer allow for. So, and then 10, 12, and 13 are all related to that mandatory suspension. So those are the ones that are being repealed with the dash 2.
Okay. Thank you for the... Just to repeat again. So again, what we do is we just restore Section 10 to existing law and go with it that way. Is there any questions? Okay. Then let's close.
We have work session going on.
We are in work session. So let's, we're in work session on 127A with the dash A2.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash A2 amendments to... Senate Bill 127.
Senator Starr has moved the dash A2 amendment to Senate Bill 127. Discussion? Any objection to that? So ordered.
Senator Chair, I move Senate Bill 127 as amended by the dash A2 amendments to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 127 to the floor again with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Virgil, you want to try this again?
I can try it again.
All right.
I just wanted to clarify, Mr. Chair, this will go as the B version of the bill.
That's true. It will be a B when it gets printed. Mr. Timmons, you want to just tell us briefly about Monday? You're going to be gone, aren't you?
I will be here.
Right here.
Monday, you are going to be looking at the gas emissions, the bill that has some findings related to global warming, and also the we're bringing the credit union bill back for work session.
Okay.
Those are the two items for Monday.
Okay. If there's anything else coming before the committee, we are adjourned.